Steve Weiss, and welcome to Taking It to the Street. I think this is episode number 4. I'm sitting here with my friend, Jim Labenthal. You may know him as Farmer Jim. And look, last week, I thought we had a great show, Jim. So much to talk about. It's really a function of what's out there to discuss. And I'd say this week, we've got quite a bit to talk about as we sit here Monday and watch a market that's just ripping to the upside. Even the NASDAQ has caught on and having a nice day, and that's been the stepchild, so to speak.
I'm happy to see it, because I got to tell you, last week there was red on the screen, and you were grumpy, man. I mean, you pushed my limits. Our listeners can't see us, but I actually had to give you the down boy signal at one point last week. You seem a little happier today. You're still your normally rabid, curmudgeonly self, but we'll deal with it, and our viewers know us well enough to get through it.
Yeah, I mean, look, most of my screen, and I've got it right in front of me, is green. I've got one outlier, and it's not an insignificant outlier, Moderna, which is down 14% as we speak. As I've mentioned with that stock, I think it's a good idea with a lot of event-driven stocks to have some protection. Out of the money puts, selling calls don't really do anything for you because it'll protect you to a little bit. But if you buy some puts, and unfortunately I have out of the money puts, and I do in a size larger than the position, so I'm actually fairly neutral on the stock today, but I bring that up because this was a big weekend in terms of Fauci coming out and talking about the new variant and saying, hey, this may not be as bad as people think. So what's your take on that?
Let me give you my take. Also, let me just say this to satisfy compliance, that when we talk about individual stocks, Steve, if you hear me talking positively, assume I own the stock unless I say otherwise. And the full disclosures are at the end. I wanted to say that because we are going to talk about Moderna and others. But I will say this now to address your comment. Omicron, whatever you want to call it. Okay. We talked about this last week. I think it's a dud. I think it's an aftershock, an after tremor, an echo, whatever you want to call it, of a true issue, a true cataclysmic event, which was the original pandemic. These things happen routinely when there is a cataclysmic bear market recessionary event. You get aftershocks. That's all this is. Its impact is and will wane. Underneath this, you've got a very strong economy. You look at TSA traveler throughput. You look at stocks today, like the Alaska Airlines, one of my stocks. That's
UAL's up 10% also.
That's one of yours, right?
No, I don't own it. I sold it higher, fortunately.
Okay, but just continue on. Look at the casinos. Look at the cruise lines. These things are ripping because Omicron is a head fake, was a head fake, will be a head fake.
You know, I'm not so sure about that. I think it's still too early to call. I think these stocks got heavily shorted, and what you're seeing now in part is short covering and some buying. But Stephen Hoge from Moderna, he's the president of Moderna, what he came out and said in an interview was, I thought, very troubling. They and Pfizer and BioNTech and every other company, they don't wait for the variants to hit. They do some work ahead of time. They say, what if this is the variant? And what he said in the interview is that they had 10 strains that they were hoping would never surface, that were the worst strains possible. And Omicron has 8 of those 10. So that's pretty bad news. Now, that doesn't mean that the vaccines are completely ineffective. The truth is, we just don't know. So you're about a week and a half away from knowing. You could see more volatility. But on the show last week, as I said, I haven't sold anything into the downdraft, but I haven't really bought anything except for some things that have nothing to do with that. Like I added to Goldman. And as I mentioned last week, I'm short bonds. That's working out very well today because that was just a ridiculous reaction low. So maybe the economy is shutting down again, which it's not. So I'm not there where you are, but often you're not where I am. So it's sort of fair.
It's interesting though, because look, I know you have your core long-term holdings. You and I think alike on that, but I know you have a trading bucket around that that is short-term. And to hear what you just said is both surprising and soothing to me that you haven't done a lot of trading in the last week, because I submit to you, things are moving around in the markets so fast that it's really hard to get it right. And think about last week for a second. Okay, 3 of those days, the intraday reversals were tremendous. Tuesday and Wednesday, when Powell was talking to the Senate and House of Representatives, I mean, those nosedives when he started talking were unbelievable. And on the flip side, very positively, on Friday afternoon, that last hour of trading, the markets turned around and took off. Now, granted, they closed in the red, but I am telling you,
they really
took off. Not that heavily, not compared to where they were. Serious climb in the afternoon, very positive. Not surprised to see the follow through today. But the point that I'm really driving at, and you alluded to it, is things in the market are moving around so quickly that if you're going to try to trade these things, you better be pretty darn nimble. And frankly, I don't think people are that nimble. I don't recommend people try it.
Well, thank you for those comments because it gave me a chance for my stomach to settle after you mentioned me and soothing you in the same sentence. So
yeah, my stomach too. Now I don't feel so good.
Yeah, I mean, oh God, I think I swallowed it. Look, here's what I'd say. It's a very tough market to trade. With this kind of volatility, you got to really, really be on your game. And I know very few people can do it. It's usually a recipe for losing money. Use stops if you're going to trade. Trade should always use stops. Some are so volatile that you have to use a wide stop. You can't put it below the market because then you get taken out before it happened. But look, we'll see what happens in the next week, week and a half. I think the important thing is, though, and Steve Leisman talked about this on CNBC today, and I agree with him. I was there last week, and he wasn't, which is that the Fed is going to go when they meet. They meet on the 15th, the second day, two-day meeting. And when I say go, I mean they're going to double what they're doing in terms of the taper. So they're going to get it over by early next year, and then they'll start to hike. Market will be nonplussed by it when they do it, but leading up to then, it depends what happens in the interim. So if the data really accelerates in terms of gets a lot hotter, I'm talking about inflation, it's coming out on Friday, then the market's going to get nervous. If the data decelerates and the Fed's tightening into a decelerating economy, then that's another issue.
So, Steve, God, this is hard to say, but I think you're right, okay? At least
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Something broke up. Can you say that again?
I'm not going to say it again, okay? It is data dependent, though. No question about it. And I think there's a pretty good chance that the data starts to cool a little bit. You're starting to see indications of supply chain bottlenecks easing. The General Motors report last week that they are getting semiconductors. They're starting to produce. They raised their guidance above their high end. Let me continue here for a second, because you're also seeing tentative signs at the ports in Los Angeles and Long Beach that those containers aren't dwelling on the yards there. Now, before you keep going, listeners can't see this, but he's dying to jump in because there's a point
just
I want
to correct
make.
You.
But hang on a second. Data dependent, yes, but I'm also going to submit something to you about Chairman Powell. I think this is an exquisitely political chairman. I don't think we or anyone gives him enough credit for his political savvy. He got badly burned during the Trump administration. He was a pinata. And now what he's
done— wasn't?
Well, okay, that's a good point, but he still got badly burned and he's still here. He also got badly burned by being aggressive on rate hikes in the fourth quarter of 2018.
It was a mistake.
It was a mistake.
Yeah,
it was. Here's what I think he's doing, okay? I think he was extraordinarily dovish up until President Biden renominated him. At that point, he shifted politically and he said, okay, I got to go before the Senate. I got to go before the democratically controlled banking committee and they're going to flay me alive and then I'm going to get flayed alive in the Senate. So that's why last week he is saying, you know what? We're going to accelerate the taper. And I agree they probably will. Where you and I disagree is I don't think he's in any hurry to raise interest rates. I think the taper gets the Senate off his back during the confirmation. After he's confirmed, he's just going to go along la-di-da-di-da and let interest rates stay where they are.
Let me correct a few things. He's not confirmed yet.
I didn't say that he was.
Right.
But so how is that a correction?
Because he was nominated based upon where he stands. And I don't think he's going to. The Republicans want him to tighten. They want the tapering stop. The Democrats don't. Democrats want free money.
You said you were correcting me, but
let me get to it. Let me get to it. No, I'm not confirming.
Today.
I'm going to get to it right now. So you're awful feisty today. Stop. Go back. We like the tranquil Jim. If he's saying he's going to tighten and he's leading people to believe that, and he said it 2 days in a row, he's going to do it. Okay? Because before being a politician, he needs credibility to run the Fed. To say that he's being political and you like Powell is taking a shot at him and saying that he's a low quality politician and not one of the most powerful people in the world. And
I think he's pragmatic.
And I think that's a mistake. I think he's going
Tighten, by the way. You said, I don't think you meant it. That's why I'm interrupting you.
I do mean tighten.
But he didn't go before Congress and say he was tightening. You said he
That was the language.
No, that it was not. No, it was not. Last week was all about accelerating the taper. Nothing
That's
about
tightening. When you take liquidity out of the markets, you're tightening economic monetary policy.
Most people that I run with would consider tightening to be raising interest rates.
Well, can I suggest that you run with a more intelligent crowd then?
No, you may not, because being less accommodative is exactly that, being less accommodative.
Okay, we're talking semantics. We're talking semantics.
Well,
I'm going to stick with what I said, that when you're removing—
I'm glad I made my clarification.
Okay, good. When you're removing monetary policy, you're tightening monetary policy. So whether that's a taper or whether it's rates, and by the way—
They are still buying bonds.
Well, right, but they're going to end it by March. They can't just end it right now. You still have easy money with interest rates at 50 or 75 bips or 1%, but yet you've tightened. So let's move on to something else. In terms of supply chain easing, I spoke to one of the largest freight companies in the world, number three person at the company, and he says, no, they're not seeing real signs of supply chain easing. What they're seeing is they're seeing the ships that were hovering around the LA port being pushed further out to sea. And given the illusion that the supply chain's eating. It doesn't mean there are not more semis available, because don't forget how far they've been backordered. So they're catching up. Things are being delivered, with the supply chain being as upset and behind the eight ball as it was, doesn't mean nothing was getting through. Now some things are getting through that have been waiting at the ports. But definitively, this individual said, who's in the know, if anybody's in the know, it's this person, supply chain is not getting better. Now, it's only a matter of time, and the market's going to believe what it wants to believe. So in the space of a day, a weekend, we've gone from a half-empty market to a half-full market, and that's what you're seeing today. We
Yeehaw.
Could see it reverse.
Yeehaw. All right, I didn't want to keep interrupting you because I felt I was being rude, but you keep putting out mistakes there, so now I have to catch up. Yes, I will grant you, it is correct that at the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach, they have moved those ships offshore 150 miles, but that's not what I'm talking about when I'm talking about supply chain bottlenecks easing. Container leasing rates have clearly rolled over. Container dwell times in the shipyard have clearly gone down, and this only matters to one extent if there is products on the shelves. Walmart, Target, these companies have said in the last 2 weeks that they are going to be fully stocked for the Christmas season, which we're in right now.
What should they say? Hey, everybody, we have no goods. Don't come into our stores because the shelves are going to be empty.
Listen,
I expect them
to be fully truthful. And you do too. You do too.
I do not.
I think you're playing with me now. You expect them to be fully truthful.
That would be
a tremendous SEC violation. I mean, holy moly.
Well, it depends what the definition is.
I'm not with you on this. Go ahead.
You must be partying an awful lot, your definition of partying this weekend, because maybe you're sleep deprived to come up with all these nonsensical statements. They could be fully stocked, but it doesn't mean they're fully stocked in the goods they want there. And by the way, none of them are fully stocked. They're saying we'll have plenty of goods for the public to buy. They have to say that. That's not going to lead to an SEC investigation.
I don't agree.
Of course they do.
I don't agree with you. Your opinion is clear, and my opinion is clear too. I do not agree with you. I think it is insane for any executive to get on a quarterly earnings release and say anything that could come back to bite them and have shareholders suing them. Before you jump in here, you know when a company gets in the crosshairs of the class action litigators that all that happens is every day, it's just more of this litigation garbage. Those companies are smarter than that. They've got legal eagles that will stop them from saying stupid things like they're fully stocked when they're not. You just will not convince me of that.
I think you're misinterpreting what I said. Okay. Number one, on the conference calls, they said, and I heard a lot of them, we believe that we'll have enough merchandise. They didn't say we will definitively be fully stocked with everything that everybody wants. There are nuances. There are shades of gray. And I think it's a virtual impossibility with the supply chain. Say it's easing, as you believe. I don't believe it's easing so much. With the supply chain the way it is, for them to have the same offerings, product offerings, they had pre-COVID. It's just not going to happen.
You know what I just remembered? I've worked with you for 8 years now. You do get grumpy around the holiday season. I forgot that. You do. Every year, you act like the Grinch. You do.
I don't think that's true.
I honestly, I'm having flashbacks. You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
That's not my take on it. I'm bubbly. I'm cheerful. I'm one of the most upbeat people in the world.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what, since we're talking about, now I'm going to chuckle as I say this, not at you, but at what's going on. SEC, probes, Tesla, Lucid. I mean, come on. What do we got here? I mean,
Donald Trump, world media. That's another one.
I mean, anybody with half a brain saw this coming, all of this coming, right?
Yeah. I mean, with Tesla, it's surprising that it wasn't years ago. When you take a look at their acquisition of SolarCity, mm-hmm. it made no sense. What were the synergies, number one? Number two, if you look at their filings, as I did a while ago, SpaceX was receiving funding from the government, which they do, as all defense companies do, all space companies do. And they were using that funding to buy SolarCity bonds. Now, if you take a look who the biggest holder was and who was buying all the offerings, it was SpaceX. So the government comes to SpaceX and says, you can't do that anymore. And that's when Musk went out and acquired his brother's company. His brother was CEO there, which he owned also. It was a large holding. So I'd say it's long overdue what's going on there.
I would too. I say it's laugh out loud funny because you and I have been around the block for a long time. And we have seen that when you have long periods of free money, which is what this low interest rate environment is, in the beginning, smart people figure out what to do, and the economy needs smart people to do things with that free money. But now what you've got is the height of speculation that has pushed companies like Tesla or Lucid or Rivian to impossible, preposterous valuations that puts them in the crosshairs of regulators who look at exactly the sort of shenanigans that you're talking about. And oh, by the way, and yes, I'm jumping to a lot of things here that are going to make some of our listeners angry at me, but I don't care. I'm calling it like I see it, all right? The action in cryptocurrencies this past weekend.
Well, before we get there, and that's a great topic, we both want to get there, let's finish on Lucid.
Go ahead.
And Tesla and the autos. Look, I'm not saying that Tesla did anything wrong here. I'm not saying Lucid did anything wrong here. Let's talk about buying stocks when there's an SEC investigation. It depends on what it is, pure and simple. I bought a stock, I remember one time, Key Energy. There's an SEC investigation, and it stayed for years. They couldn't be current in their filings, not their annual, not their quarterlies. They just couldn't do it. And the stock remained under pressure. There's a certain segment of the institutional population that just won't buy stocks that can't stay current on their filings. And I shouldn't have. I lost some good money.
And the flip side of what you're saying is there is a segment of the investing population that will buy stocks.
It's an opportunity.
Devil may care what the details are. Right. No, it's not an opportunity.
No, I'm talking about sometimes when the SEC files, depends what it is.
But the point I'm making is that when you have free money and it begets the speculative fervor that we've had for many years now, it finds its way into securities that money should not find its way into.
Right.
That's the point I'm making.
Right.
And by the way, I am not saying that Tesla, the company, isn't fabulous at what their core business is, okay?
They are. Great company.
But the actual governance of that company is terrible. It just is terrible. And it stems, you can cite any of a number of examples, the 419 tweet from a few years ago, the continual thumbing of the nose of the CEO at the SEC. Eventually, the G in ESG matters, and it's going to come back to bite them. I don't care how good they are on the E. There's a lot of competition on the E being environmentalism.
You know, it's funny, having met with some of the largest asset managers in the world about corporate governance, they just don't care. What they care about, and they should care about, is diversity, equity, and inclusion. They should. But they don't care about how companies are being run. I'm talking about primarily the index managers. So there's very little on ESG. It's really about diversity, and it's about environmental. That's it. So it's a tough topic. But let's talk about those autos. The valuations still are egregious. You did a great job, made some good money in your put position on Rivian, made a lot of money on it.
But that stock just whips around back and forth. Still, its valuation is twice what it should be at the very most.
And a high-quality product. I had somebody on Twitter call me an idiot, and also Joe Terranova, because we're dinosaurs. We don't get it. We don't get that these companies, these legacy car companies, can be out of business. Number one, they're not going to be. Number two, VW is the largest seller of EVs in Europe. And will soon be in the U.S. I've said that multiple times before. But there's room. The car market, there's room for a lot. And by the way, EVs are so far away from being the majority of cars owned because of the lack of infrastructure like charging stations that it's kind of lunacy. Now, Rivian it's still too high a valuation. Could it grow into it over time? Yes. If it comes out and the valuation stabilizes here, well, then that's the benchmark. And that's what it'll trade off of, regardless of what it's really worth. It is a quality product. There's no doubt about that. And it's nice having Amazon as a major holder and with a major order there. And as an aside, maybe you want to look at UPS, who has Amazon business now and may not keep it with this. But you're involved in the autos. And what's
So I'm listening to you. I'm smirking because I think we're triggering a lot of probably younger investors. And I will say that's not our point, is to tweak you and make you mad at us. And certainly I get the dinosaur comments too. I will say this. Steve and I got to where we are by knowing what it is we're doing. And there is a saying from the Who song, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I used to love the Who when I was younger. I think that this younger generation, as they continue on, and I hope they will with their investing careers and go through real interest rate cycles, will find out that there's rationality to looking at things like valuation, rationality to thinking about things like competition. Let's just do the thought experiment for a second that the legacy automakers don't make it. And I'm long GM. You know I'm long GM. Yep, so yep. I'm not saying they won't make it. I think the legacy automakers are actually where you want to be. But let's just take that argument for a second that the legacy automakers go away. So how are you going to divide this pie between Tesla, Lucid, Rivian, Nikola, Workhorse, NIO? I mean, I'm going on and on. That's an impartial list. Even if you took the legacy OEMs out of the picture, you got a hell of a lot of competition. And by the way, the legacy OEMs are looking pretty damn strong right now. They're not
going away. Don't forget, they have the dealer networks. The others don't have the dealer networks.
And they have scale. Okay,
right.
They have scale in terms of how they produce. They have scale in terms of how they market. They have name recognition. Anyway, I know. We're going to get some hate mail on this one. It's okay.
Yeah, and as far as dinosaurs, look, I think you're like Barney the dinosaur, whereas I'm more like a raptor. I think that's how people would look at us. And that's fine. You're wearing purple and green today, it looks like. I haven't seen the khakis, but I'm sure they're khaki colors again. Okay, let's move on from the autos. There's always going to be a difference of opinion. Truth is, there's room for all of them. They won't all survive, though. They won't all thrive. And we've seen that in past cycles with the autos. So particularly as rates go up,
so
it costs more to lease.
So we were going to talk about cryptos. Big move over the weekend, okay? And I'm not wishing ill on anyone, okay? Because this is now a big asset class, a couple of trillion dollars across all cryptos. What I think you're going to see here is that this is very similar to me for Web 1.0 back in the late 90s. Things got blown way out of proportion. You had all sorts of valuations, like what should the share price per eyeball viewer on the website be? I remember websites and business models that should have failed and did fail, as most of them did. I think you're going to see something similar here. You're eventually going to see a pretty big shakeout in the cryptocurrency world. By the way, if central banks really do get into cryptocurrencies, that could be a dangerous thing for the current setup. But eventually, cryptocurrencies will, of course, be with us. I think people are going to lose a lot of money in the shakeout that's yet to come.
So I own some Bitcoin. I own it through Robinhood. Why? Because it's commission-free to buy it there.
Bitcoin is kind of like they say now, the boomer's cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Like, well, apparently you're supposed to be in Shiba Inu or something like that.
It changes all the time, which is actually one of the issues with it.
I agree.
Right?
I totally agree. Go ahead.
Dogecoin, there's nothing behind it. Look at what that got to. But cryptocurrency, it's not a currency. It won't be a currency. It will never be a currency. And the reason I say that is for a few reasons. Number one, the volatility. It's just too great. When it can move up or down 10% or even 20% this weekend, how do you use it as currency?
I totally agree. It is not a store of value. Our good friend Scott Wapner tweeted that over the weekend. It was a one-sentence tweet, and he's absolutely right. It's not a store of value when you have this sort of volatility. How are you going to use it as a currency when you go to buy a slice of pizza or a car, and one day you're paying this many Bitcoins, the next day you're paying half as many, and the day after that you're paying four times as many? It's not a currency.
It's too cumbersome.
It's a speculative investment.
It is
By the way, I don't think speculation is bad. I really don't.
No.
I don't do it, or at least I don't do very much of it at all. But I like to be able to value something. I like to have that margin of safety. Seth Klarman pretty much trademarked that expression. But when you value something and you have a basis for the price you pay, you feel safer with it, even if it goes down. Bitcoin at wherever it is, 49,000 today. I can't tell you that it should be 49,000. I can't tell you it should be 490,000. I can't tell you it should be $4,900, and nobody can.
No, you're absolutely right. However, it is an asset class, so I respect it as an asset class. People will trade it. They think value's there. I don't.
Are currencies, traditional currencies, for you an asset class?
Yeah, I believe they are, yes.
Okay.
There are enough trading desks, foreign exchange trading
desks. I asked that as an earnest inquiry.
You know, no other way but to ask as an earnest inquiry.
Yeah.
That's your method.
Because there's never any response from you that has a barb to it or a sharp edge. So I always go into my discussions with you leading with my chin.
My answer's like Switzerland. I take no position. I just want to be informative.
Yeah. No glass chin here, Mr. Weiss. No, I ask what I said about currencies because you and I do, as we've said many times, run a little differently. I have a retail client base and that's who I appeal to. We generally don't trade currencies unless we need to actually have a transaction in a foreign currency. But to actually speculate in currencies, that's not our gig.
So much leverage to trade currencies, right? Because the moves could be like $1.09 to $1.08 against the pound sterling or some other currency. So you use tons of leverage to make it worth your while. And that could be where you get into trouble also, because leverage cuts both ways. But yes, I believe it is an asset class. In terms of gold, gold's been around since the beginning of time, and people aren't buying cars with gold. I don't know what the intrinsic value of gold is. It's difficult to say, but I do know this. Gold has another utility away from just being a trading vehicle, and that's for jewelry. It's got minor industrial utilities, but it's really jewelry. So at least there's some value there.
I do want to go back to crypto. I want to go back to the comparison to Web 1.0, because from Web 1.0, and I'm speaking about the internet in the late 90s,
right. There
are companies that are still with us today that are fabulous companies. And of course, at the top of the list is Amazon, but also eBay. And from eBay spawned PayPal. And oh, by the way, Priceline, which is now Booking. So there are companies that are still with us. And the reason I bring that up is not to say that cryptocurrency is bad, not to say that it's all going away. I don't think it's all going away. But what I am saying is that when you have the sort of acolytes, the sort of devotees who can only see the positives and can't see the warts on something like cryptocurrencies, it's usually a setup for a fall. I do think the catalyst for this will be a more aggressive Fed, which is second half of 2022.
It's clearly a risk asset. That's what we've seen.
Absolutely. With this sort of volatility and return. Return comes from volatility.
Return's been phenomenal if you've been in from the beginning, but you never know when it ends. I think it'll keep going. I mean, I haven't sold my Bitcoin. Small position. It's not going to affect me one way or the other. I don't even remember the last time I looked at my Robinhood account to see where I am on it. So that's how insignificant it is. There's nothing to do with it. I just have it because I have it. It's a
spec. I want to throw a bone to those probably younger listeners out there who are saying, they've probably been shaking their head the last 10 minutes, Steve and Jimmy don't get it. We do get it, all right? I understand the concept of DeFi. I understand the idea of these contracts that can be written on the blockchain. And I understand that for a lot of younger people, they want that because they don't believe the institutions that you, Steve, and I have grown up on. I grant you that, okay? But what I also need to be granted in return, because this is the reality right now, is those institutions that are being pilloried by the DeFi crowd are here right now. They are vibrant. They are likely to co-opt DeFi. They are likely to co-opt cryptocurrency and the blockchain, far more likely than they are to be out-competed by it. So just stay tuned. And again, when I say stay tuned, remember my refrain, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
It sort of reminds me a little bit of cannabis stocks when they first came out and you saw Tilray trading up to 250, 300, maybe it never got 300. Now, what is it, 12? And cannabis just never was a really good investment. It was a great trade for a period of time, but it was a hot thing. And I heard the same thing there because I was not a believer, saying, you just don't get it, Steve. You don't get it. So that's what people's default are. You're older. You've been doing this too long. Bring somebody new in. Bring somebody who thinks young. I think all ages. I think I want to make money. I've got nothing against making money. I love making money. So I look at everything. Maybe there's an opportunity there. I looked at Bitcoin. I didn't see the opportunity for me. Now, I missed it with the big move. I owned it in the 20,000 range, and I sold it around 30,000. And then I bought it back, and I'm probably losing a little now. But the point is, you and I are not allergic to new things.
Absolutely.
We want to see them. GM is changing their stripes. That's a new thing. So that's why you bought it. So I just think the first thing out of people's mouths can't be, you're an idiot, you don't understand it, you've been doing this too long, you need fresh eyes. It's not true. Maybe it's true in picking up some real early trends because you're sort of in the flow of that information. But once it gets going, no, I'm not allergic to anything that's new.
Totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. And my hat is off to those early adopters who got into cryptocurrency.
Made a fortune.
And made a fortune. And I've met some of them. And they're really cool people.
Winklevoss twins?
Yeah.
Killed it.
Absolutely got to hand it to him. Absolutely got to hand it to him. Mike Novogratz, got to hand it to him.
And he's not a young guy.
That's true. He's older than me.
So if Novogratz can do it, how can you say all people are idiots? Kathy Woods, she's no spring chicken. Owning all this, owning Coinbase, everything she owns. Why don't we talk about Kathy Woods for a minute? I think
very good segue there, Steve. Let's do that. You go ahead. You start this.
It's been a great training vehicle for me, both on the long and short side. Now, I covered my short on Friday. I wasn't in it for a long time because it's tough to borrow. So not that it cost me a lot. The cost for tough to borrow stocks when you short them isn't that high generally. If it's too high, I'm not doing it because then the short interest is crazy. But you can get squeezed out of those. And I thought we could bounce today. I didn't count in this kind of bounce, frankly. But I thought we would bounce. I covered it Friday, made my money, moved on. Kathy takes a five-year view. She has no choice. I believe she does, but she has no choice but to say that also. Last year, 2020, she was up, 160% her main fund. This year, I think she's down. Not huge, but she's down in a market that's up pretty nicely. But it's a mistake, and we touched on this the last show, I think, to have a portfolio. It's okay for Kathy, you know what you're getting into, of these highly valued stocks. When I say high value, 50 times revenue, 100 times revenue, or no EBITDA, Unity Software. I think it's a good company. I think it will be one of the foundations of the metaverse. And I do believe in the metaverse. I just don't think it's that exotic as the name would dictate. You're really talking about 3D internet is what you're talking about. And it's out there and it's happening and it's great. But Unity Software, 40, 50 times revenue. Making no money. There's a private company, Epic Games, that owns the other half of the metaverse right now in terms of being the engine that I looked at. They're generating $1 billion in free cash flow each year.
So what you are alluding to is what I was talking about earlier when I said margin of safety. And I brought up legendary investor Seth Klarman, who I believe coined that phrase and wrote a book that is now, there was one printing of it, and if you have a copy of it, it's worth thousands of dollars. Basically, what this comes down to is if you can properly value a security, then you have a margin of safety. And what you're saying is pick whatever stock. You want to pick Unity Software, we'll pick Unity Software. I have nothing against the company. It's the valuation, which you say is what times sales? Just what number?
It's roughly 40 times.
Today. Call it 40 times sales. If I buy it today, Steve.
Down from I think, 65 just a few weeks ago.
So there's the point. Let's just say that you were my client, and 2 weeks ago I bought Unity Software for you at 65 times sales. And today it's down, whatever it's down, let's say it's down a third, and its price to sales is now 40. And you call me up angry, and you say, Jimmy, you lost me in 2 weeks, a third of my value. Why did you buy the stock at that price? I cannot look you in the eye. I cannot speak to you with any integrity and say that I knew that that was the right price to buy. On the other hand, if I buy, I don't know, let's pick Apple. I'll just pick Apple. Why not? Currently at around 26 times forward earnings. And sure, things bad and good will come and go with the stock. They'll say they've got lighter demand. They'll say they've got better demand. But at 26 times earnings, if the stock goes down, I know what that earnings multiple should be relative to the growth rate.
Can I tell you why that's not an on-point example? I'm not being funny here. It's not on point because your clients, your accounts are investing with you because you're a value buyer. They're not investing with you to buy Unity. They're investing with you to buy GM. Now, there are other asset managers, Kathy Woods being one, but there are plenty of others that say, I want you to buy the Unities for me. I know they can go down by 30, 40, 50%, but most of the ones I'm counting you buying are going to go up twice. They'll go up three times. They'll go up four times. So it's a question of what your expectations are going in. I don't think anybody, or the most reasonable, the educated investor, isn't surprised that Unity can go down. Basically, it's down about 40%. They're not surprised at that.
Oh, Steve. This is where you and I differ. And I think actually you should open an account and put all of your assets with me, because then you'll understand what I'm talking about. That when you're talking to retail clients, not institutional clients, and a stock, any stock goes down 33% in 2 weeks, they don't understand. They didn't understand the price at which it was purchased. They don't understand the price that it trades at today. And that's why I buy value, is because my clients come to me wealthy. I want to protect their wealth. I want to grow it sanely. But if they see me buying stocks, and you're agreeing with me, so don't just be grumpy just for the sake of being grumpy. If they see me buying a stock at 65 times sales, and then 2 weeks later, it's at 40 times sales, and I don't have a good reason for why I bought it at 65 times. By the way, there's no good reason to buy any stock at 65 times sales.
If you were managing money for me,
you'd be a very happy man.
No, like when I invested Dave Tepper's money, I used to invest in hedge funds, his personal capital. If I had one time, I'm investing in this growth manager, and he's got great numbers. I'm telling you, he was annualizing 28% a year, net of fees, net of 220 for a number of years. And I saw a couple of positions in there, one being Stillwater Mining. And I said, you only do tech and you only do healthcare, biotech and med devices. What's Stillwater Mining be doing in there? He said, well, we saw great value. I said, but that's not what you do. So that's called going away from your discipline. So if I were you, if I were one of your accounts and you're telling me I'm a value investor, here's the PE that I won't buy above or the price to revenue. And that's obviously not as simple as that. But if I see you've got a portfolio blended PE of like 15 times, and then you own Unity, and then you own Snowflake, I'm firing you as my manager because
it's hard to argue otherwise.
Because you went against your discipline. So I don't know what else you're going
to
do.
Okay,
so that's different.
To be clear, because man, now we got the grumpy Steve back. My goodness.
This is the.
Do you want to just take a look where the markets are?
No.
I know.
The markets
are.
I don't know. I'm clairvoyant.
I'm teasing. But to be clear, I'm not owning Snowflake or Palantir or any of those stocks.
No, you're not.
I know. But you're so grumpy.
Snowflake's kind of interesting, actually.
You're going to drive me to drink, Steve.
I'd like you to leave to get a drink right now, actually. But Snowflake's kind of interesting because it really holds its valuation, like as opposed to CrowdStrike and all the others. And I don't get it. You talk about governance. They're paying that CEO and they say, oh, that's what he needs to come out of retirement. It's like $100 million a month. Do you mean to tell me that if you said $50 million a month is as high as we can go, he would say, I'm staying retired. Of course they'd take it. He would have taken it. To me, that it's just comical.
Snowflake, all I can remember is when it came public and there was all the breathless commentary on CNBC,
right,
our channel, various promoters, investors coming on, and they were saying, basically what they were saying is, look at the total addressable market for Snowflake. It's whatever it was, $100 billion.
I've heard that.
Let me just finish. Believe me, we're on the same wavelength here. And then they're saying, so why shouldn't it have a market cap of $80 billion? And I'm thinking about Scott McNeely in the year 2001. Scott McNeely was the CEO of Sun Microsystems, which was one of the darlings of the late 90s stock market rally that was phenomenal. And in 2001, after the bubble burst, he said, you guys, speaking to the investment community at large, you guys were buying my stock at 10 times sales, 10 times sales. So you were assuming that I could give you 10 times my return, assuming that I paid no cost of goods sold. I pay my employees nothing. I put nothing into research and development. I pay no taxes and I have no competition. When I hear people say that a certain valuation is justified by the total addressable market, this term TAM is fairly recent, okay, in terms of an acronym. It is. It's the last few years. It is the last few years that has been bandied about as a valuation tool. It's absolute malarkey. It says nothing about the earnings.
Jim, you're wrong about the emergence of TAM. I can tell you that. As a banker, that was when we brought IPOs, we always used TAM. And we always used to say—
Not as a valuation tool.
It's still not a valuation
tool. That's my point. You're just disagreeing for the sake of disagreeing.
You sound like somebody trolling me on Twitter. No, that's not the case, okay? We've always said, and you back into the valuation if you use TAM, we'd always say the addressable market's $200 billion. All we need to do is get 1% of that.
But that's not what's going on today.
Okay, and then you take that. So I've got that $2 billion, that 1% of the $200 billion market. And now I say, okay, what would that mean to me on an earnings per share basis? That's how you use it. That story is as old as time. It's the most ridiculous. All I need is 1%. You throw out the small number, said, all I need is that, and people buy onto it. And that's what a lot of people are doing, going back to the point, with the Snowflakes of world and the others. Now, Snowflakes, I don't mean to pick on.
No, that's not what they're doing. What you're doing is you're missing the larger point because you have an opportunity to disagree with me. My point is, so I want to go back to it because I know you actually agree with this, much to your dismay, is when somebody tells you, as they did when Snowflake came out, that the TAM was $100 billion and the market cap immediately after the IPO was $80 billion so you could buy the stock. You and I both know that those numbers do not compute, and that is not a number at which you should buy Snowflake.
Correct. Correct.
What have we done?
If the market's $200 billion, the market cap's $80 billion.
Do you want to just retire right now, hang up the cleats, I'll have them bronzed, send them to your house?
They're not getting 40% of the market. But that's not the complete story, no Snowflake either. All right. We beat Snowflake to death. We've melted that Snowflake, I guess, so to speak.
With the heat in the room.
Right, right. So what do you think going forward? You're all in, Jim. Today's a good day to be an all in, Jim. We do have those inflation numbers. Is it a smooth sailing upward move, as virtually every strategist on the street is saying?
And I know that bothers you, and I understand why, because usually when everybody's saying one thing, you're supposed to go the other way. I agree with the concept.
Here's why it doesn't bother me. Because strategists get paid to be long. They don't get
you
paid.
You are 100% right.
Okay?
And, you're 100%
and,
right.
And if they're negative at any point in time, they better be damn right in a short period of time, otherwise they're looking for another job. Because that does nothing to bring them revenue.
Okay, it's true. But it's also true that most of the time, markets do go up. Now, I actually want to get off of this.
So why do you need a strategist?
Let's go back to your question. What do I think the market's going to do? And I'm going to tell you with probably more granular detail than I should.
Please don't.
Well, I am. I think you're going to get a year-end rally. I've been consistent with that. Who the heck wants to sell right now? And look at the dip you had last week, and now we're bouncing right off of it. That 5% dip, that's all this market will take as long as the Fed is buying bonds. Now, let me continue. You're going to get into January. Bonuses will come in, 401k catch-ups, all that sort of stuff, and that'll propel the market for a few weeks into January. Then something will happen. The buyers won't be there, and I can't tell you what the catalyst is going to be. But in the first quarter, you're actually going to see a meaningful reduction in the amount of Fed bond purchases and thus the amount of cash that's coming into the financial system at the same time that the buyers are exhausted. So you will probably get a full-on 10% plus correction in the first quarter. I'm riding this wave into January, and then I'll lighten up. We've talked on the show, you and I, about Apple and how I have a trading position. You have trading positions as well.
We've talked about Apple way too much.
No. It's not about Apple. It's about trading positions. Okay. Sometime in early January, I'll take that trading position off. I'll probably lighten up on Qualcomm, a few other things that have done well, and just not raise a ton of cash. We've talked about that. You don't want to be out of the market, but raise a little bit of cash to be opportunistic when that correction comes.
I think it's getting a little too cute. If you see a correction coming, how much more can the market be up? Are you looking for 5%? Are you looking for 2%? What are you looking for?
Oh, that's an honest question. I thought that was just a making fun of me.
No.
No, for the rest of the year?
It's actually a question I wanted your answer to as opposed to all the others, but yes.
Now, listen, I don't have a number in mind, but I think that it is reasonable to think that you will set a new high in the S&P 500 this year. That's a good 3% higher than where we are right now. I don't think that's crazy. Now, I'm certainly not saying you have another 10% higher uninterrupted by volatility. I think volatility is going to increase.
Let me ask you this question. So you've got 3% upside, and come January, you have 10% downside. Why are you playing that? A 3-to-1 downward scenario.
I want to sell right now. I don't want to sell my Apple. I don't want to sell my Qualcomm.
So what's going to be down for that 10%? What's going to be down that
10%? I don't know. When we get to January, I'll see what I feel like trimming. I'm not going to predict that now. What I'm telling you, you asked my opinion, I'm giving it to you. I think we rally into year end. I know you don't quite agree, that's fine. I hear you on how the entire community, analyst community, is saying the same thing. It's true.
It's always the case.
But you know what? Listen, history says that this is true. Evidence says that when you have a market that is up as much as it is right now, a good 22% year to date, that it's going to rally into the year end. By the way, there's not much time left on the year.
There's also history because I've looked at this. When you've got markets that are up 22 and 30% in a year, they continue to do that for a number of years.
As they have. Can I make a point here? Because thank you for bringing this up. Do you know what the 10-year annualized return on the S&P 500 is? Whole number, you don't have to go down to like 100 basis points. Do you know what it is?
I want to say it's right now 14%. Historically, it was 7%. And then it went up to 11%.
Okay. So you're making the point. I'm impressed. It's 16% for the last 10 years. And all of us who've grown up in this business saying that the stock market should return 9-10% per annum. By the way, nobody remembers the 2000s, or at least talks about the decade of the aughts when you were flat. When you were flat.
10 years for the NASDAQ to get back to what it was in 2000.
The reason I bring it up is not because I think we're going to have a flat year next year or for the next 3 years, but I do think that the next few years, we shouldn't be expecting 16% per annum. It's just not likely, not with the multiples we've got, even with the growth rate and earnings that we've got. It's likely that you get lower returns on the indices and that stock picking matters quite a bit.
Okay, stock picking. So not the names that we've talked about. Let's broach new ground here. You have other names in your portfolio, even though it's a relatively concentrated portfolio. What do you like? What would you go out and buy today?
Right now, the three sectors that I am overweight, my firm's overweight, by the way. We talk about this a lot.
I'm really not a fan of overweight because that means you're managing to average. You're managing to mediocrity, slightly above it. I really dislike when people say...
Now I'm managing to your grumpiness. Let me just answer the question.
But look at the question. I'm asking you, what are your three favorite stocks? You come back, well, we're overweight this. So that means that if you think that,
hey,
these sectors are going to do X, that this sector a little better. That's not what I'm asking. I'm
saying,
what are you stocks?
Hey, Crumpalumpus, here you go, okay? First off, in energy, Marathon Petroleum, Kinder Morgan. Next, in industrials, yes, it's Boeing. You can also throw Caterpillar and Dover in there. And in financials, it's the traditional financials. It's your Goldman. It's your Citigroup. It's your JP Morgan. And let's do some bottom fishing right now. PayPal. Supposed to be picking up PayPal at these numbers.
Yeah, I kept hearing that at 210, 200. Where is it, 180, 185 now? It should rally today.
Listen, you were hearing that from me at 300, okay, that it was going down, and it did. And it's a high-quality company. I bought some at 210. I bought some at 188. That's where my purchase prices are right now.
What's the valuation on that?
You don't have it right in my mind, so you're going to have to catch me on that one. But I want to say it's about 45 times earnings, and I'll grant you that's a bit expensive. On the other hand, this is not something that's 45 times sales. Let's start there. Let's also just bear in mind that this is the direction that, in particular, consumer finance is going. So I answered your question of where I think you should be buying right now. How about you?
Dick's Sporting Goods, it was 140, and it was cheaper at 140 than it was at 120 before they reported the second quarter, they reported the third quarter, they raised their guidance. It's a retail stock and it's not Lululemon, so it's not going to sell at a 40 multiple or even a 20 multiple, but this is selling at less than a 10 times multiple, and they are the leader in the group. And they've been announcing partnerships, they announced one with Nike. They're a preferred vendor. They're hooked in. So Dick's Sporting Goods is compellingly cheap. I don't understand why it's trading as it is. It's down almost 30%. It's lunacy. So you're getting that for now, what about, 7 times earnings?
Give me one or two more. Give me one or two more. Then let's wrap it up for today because we've been going a good long while.
So I think seasonally, I still like Skyworks and Qorvo. Because
they've gotten pretty cheap here.
And those are about 10 times
earnings.
I'm
not taking a swipe at you. They've gotten pretty cheap.
They have. And I had reduced my position and had been pretty clear on that.
Let me ask you, why are they so cheap? Because sometimes, and you'll admit this, sometimes when a stock is cheap, it's telling
cheap
you to look
out. Cheap for a reason.
Yeah.
Here's why I'd say, because the last quarter for both, while they came in and beat the quarter, some of the conversation wasn't great. They were also very, Skyworks, about 50% of the business was 70 before they made an acquisition. 50% of their business was Apple. Now, surprisingly, on the day the rumors came out that Apple was cutting back on their supply chain, the stock was up. So I think it's pretty washed out. And when NVIDIA is down today and a lot of other semis are down, they're actually up 2, 3%. So I think the bottom. So I don't know. But seasonally, for a seasonal trade with the new iPhone cycle, you want to own both of these in January, if not now. January's not far away. What they do, Qorvo's business, and you know pretty well, you used to own it, is a little more diverse, but it's the RF chips. So everybody needs them. And just for the iPhone alone, they've increased what they're getting from the iPhone because the more advanced these phones get, the more RF chips you need, which bring in the signals and disperse them internally. So they've got good base businesses. They can't be designed out so easily. So Apple's not designing their own chip. Qualcomm came out with an RF chip, but it's part of their handset sales. They're not really making inroads on that against those two. So I like those two. I like Dick's and I like Goldman. And what I really like, what I've got a very big position is right now, is I'm short bonds.
Can't argue with you. I don't short stocks, so that's why I don't do that. I'm not going to short bonds either, but I don't disagree. I think yields are going higher and prices are going down. They should. There's no reason for us to have negative real yields on the 10-year right now.
No, we've got a long way to go before we do, but I look at the short and bonds this way.
We may want to save this for the next show.
Okay.
Let's leave some on the table.
And there'll still be a short for the next show as well.
Probably will. But you know the first axiom of show business. Always leave them wanting more.
Yes, that's true. It's true, Jim. So here we are. It's another great episode that we concluded. Lots of give and take. I was very giving today. I don't know if you noticed, but I tried to do it in a little more subliminal way. Hopefully when you walk away from this show, you'll see, wow, Steve was really upbeat today. He was really cheerful. Really made me feel good.
Compared to last week. My goodness.
Yeah, and last week was a fun week. So look, so until next time, Jim, any final words? Happy trading, happy investing, anything.
Stay long, stay strong,
okay,
my friends.
You got it. That may be the wrong genre for this show, but yes. So look, we'll see you all next week. Listen, and thanks so much. Have a good week.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Jim Labenthal is an investment advisor representative of Cerity Partners and holds the Chartered Financial Analyst designation. Jim Labenthal and Cerity Partners are unaffiliated with Stephen Weiss. The securities discussed in this podcast by Jim, unless otherwise stated to the contrary, are securities that Jim either manages within the current client portfolios or owned by Jim personally. You should not consider the information discussed as personalized investment, tax, or legal advice, or a solicitation to buy or sell any specific security. There's no guarantee that views and opinions expressed in this podcast will come to pass or a guarantee of future performance. Investing involves risk, and before investing, you should consult a qualified professional advisor. Stephen Weiss is not a registered investment advisor and is not affiliated with any regulated entity. The views and opinions he expresses are his own and are not intended to be advice or recommendations. Stephen does not guarantee the accuracy of his statements or views. Investors should perform their own due diligence and not rely upon the information contained in this podcast as the sole basis for their investments.